Okay, last week we talked about unity being an individual obligation. We really spent all of our time talking about things that ruin unity. As individuals, it is our obligation to strive for unity. Here are some things that mess that up completely. And these are what we talked about last week. Remember, what first on the list, I believe, was selfishness. Selfishness will ruin unity. Right, because it goes against everything that unity is. Unity is the taking of many and bringing them together in one common goal. Well, selfishness just throws that right out the window, right? It doesn't matter to me if I'm selfish what you need or what you want. I'm focused on me. And so it'll ruin that bond of unity in any case. Certainly among a local church, it'll do it in our family, among our relationships with others. Another thing we talked about that ruins unity is profitless teaching. Do we speak what the Spirit has spoken? Do we study Scripture and try to understand Scripture in light of Scripture? Or do we just chase after these things that don't really have any substance to them? That'll wreak havoc as well. Another one, I think a very big one, we looked at James 3. We talked about how uncontrolled tongues will ruin unity. We know that's the case. We know how dangerous the tongue is when that thing is unbridled and it starts setting fires all over the place. The last point we made was, don't be easily provoked. If I go around with a chip on my shoulder, what is that going to do for our chances of having unity here? Yeah, I'm a problem waiting to happen. I'm a ticking time bomb is what I am. I am just waiting for something to set me off. That's not good in any situation. It's certainly not going to be good among a group that's trying to glorify the Lord. So all of those reasons would ruin unity. All of those things would ruin unity. Certainly there are more than that. Any other thoughts on any of those? Maybe you've had a week to think about it. Anything else you want to bring up? Or anything additional that would just ruin that peace? Steve.
I'm talking about the tongue. Even if you say something that you shouldn't, you can apologize for it, but that hurt's still there.
I think in that example, we actually looked at the internet, because I think it's one of the big examples of that. When you say something on the internet, it goes out and it spreads, and then I can delete my post. But for those who have already read it, it's there and it's ingrained. And that's true when speaking in any way. You know, it is amazing what such a little thing can do. And you know, James talks about the tongue is not big, you know, but it boasts great things. Can you do some great good through what you say? It's incredible good. I mean, the people, everybody in here, Christians, are Christians because of something that was said, right? There's something we heard that was said, something very good that we believed, we took it to heart. At the same time, you can smash down walls and ruin relationships that have been built for years and years. It is so dangerous when we don't give thought to what we're doing. Chuck, yeah.
Now, we more or less talked on selfishness as far as individually. Mm. But also there are these congregations that are leaving certain things out of Scripture, out of their congregations. More or less teach like what we a lot of times where I refer to as fluff. That is also selfishness on a congregational level by not giving themselves fully to Christ and giving themselves to His will.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes back to that principle of what does God want taught?
All of it.
His whole counsel. That's what he wants taught. If his whole counsel is not taught, what happens to those who would be followers of his? What ends up happening? They end up being immature because they're getting one side of it, and yet they're not getting the complete picture. And we you mentioned fluff, and we've used the example before. You know, Chuck says fluff. I think cotton candy. It tastes good. It's not healthy, right? If that's the only thing that you're getting, you're not going to be strong. And the same is true when it comes to preaching and teaching. We'll talk about that more when we look at actual the teaching that goes on here. But why would that be a temptation? Why wouldn't everybody just teach the whole counsel of God?
Because so many people nowadays want the, for better like terminology, the Burger King way. I want it my way.
Lord willing, we're going to talk about that tonight when we get into 1 Timothy chapter 4. Are you telling me that there are people who profess to love God who don't want to know exactly what He says? Are there those who don't want to keep it exactly the way it is? They'd like a version of it. They like some of it exactly, but they like to change. It's always been that way. And the problem is, it's kind of easy to say, well, you know, those over there don't like it. That's something I've got to watch out with me, because it's easy for me to get in a situation where I'll accept less. And so we're on guard for that, and we guard each other against that too. Good. I think, you know, it could become a problem when the entire congregation accepts it. How do you stop that from happening?
Lots of study, lots of leaning on each other to build each other up and keep each other strengthened.
When that stuff first comes in, it needs to be stood against. And there needs to be, and I'm not talking about being hateful, but do some questions need to be asked? And do we need to sit down and look at this? Okay, if this teaching, if that didn't sound right, well, we need to talk about it. We need to make sure that it's right. If we do that up front, we can eliminate a lot of problems before they really take root. What happens if you just let it go and you say, I don't know that, I don't think that's right, but that'd be all right.
You're still condoning it. You might as well be done yourself.
You know, it's, is it just going to go away? Never just goes away. So certainly these are all issues, things that, especially after they've been allowed to grow, can just wreak havoc on the unity of the local church. Good, Simone.
You asked earlier, was there other things that come to mind that caused that? And I think that being discontent can bring about a long strife, because if I'm not satisfied with how things are, or doesn't fit my idealistic whatever's, or how I think it should go, then there's a temptation to start seeking out other people who, you know, kind of are not satisfied with that particular thing either. And then I've seen where people will start making phone calls, you know, trying to scope it out and see, you know, who else is not happy with this or that thing.
Yeah.
And that is just so incredibly divisive and destructive to a congregation.
It is heartbreaking. And if we threw it out there, you could name congregations where that has taken place, and I could too. This idea of, and it does come down to a lack of contentment, which, Lord willing, we'll study 1 Timothy chapter 6. Maybe not tonight, but you guys likely be studying it Wednesday night. I think there's a direct connection between a lack of contentment and selfishness. I think those two, they're just right there together, certainly connected. If I am not content with what I'm doing, I will seek something else out. I will seek to satisfy whatever that is that I feel like I'm missing. And I'll tell you another thing that will end up happening. I'll blame you guys. This is what typically happens. If I'm not content in my service to the Lord, I'm not content with what's going on here, first thing I'm probably going to do is start finding holes in you guys. Start finding perceived problems, true or not, in what's going on. Well, you know, the reason I'm not content is because of the way Chuck leads those songs. He's just not excited enough for me in those. And then, you know, the reason I'm not content is because of the way so-and-so leads a prayer. You know, it ends up shifting the blame to somewhere. Where's the real problem in that whole situation? It's right here. It's my heart. That's the problem, and I'm afraid that's what gets neglected a lot of times. And so we start pointing out, well, all of this is wrong. I need to get back to the root of the problem, which is me and my lack of contentment, and really my selfishness in that. Tim, go ahead.
It's always nice when you raise your hand at the same time as your wife, and she goes ahead and confesses for you.
It is good.
That you struggle with. But that is, I mean, confession time, that is a real struggle for me, because I want to grow. I don't want to be content with where I am. I want to grow. And that's a struggle.
Yep.
to grow yourself without looking down your nose or being discontent with other people because they're not in the same place. and they grow in different ways, and they have different experiences and different motivations and different things going on. And if we're not careful, we will allow that to create barriers instead of connections.
And one of the problems with that is I may look and assume that someone is not where I think they should be, and it may be a problem of perception on my part. I may think, well, you know, he's just, man, he wasn't there at this study because of this. And well, what I may not know is that he's got another study scheduled at that time. Did I bother to ask him? No, I just assumed. And so it may not be what I think it is. So there could be a problem of perception there as well. Now, I do want to say this. I hope in one sense we're never content with where we are, spiritually speaking. And I think you understand what I'm saying. I hope I'm never saying, you know what? I'm good. I am as grown up as I want to be in the Scriptures. I don't want to know anymore. No, let's not study Jude. I'm good with where I am now. I hope I'm never content with that. But that's different. The lack of contentment we're talking about is we've got God's ways and His things and His Word, and that's just not good enough for me. That's dangerous, and that's going to lead us into something else. We'll chase after things if that's the case. Good thoughts, good points. Hey, yeah, Jeff, go ahead.
That personal life of contentment can very easily lead me. To being judgmental about others. And that's dangerous. I cannot see how I can do that and then say in the next breath how much I love it.
You can't, honestly. You're absolutely right. And isn't this the problem with the Pharisees that we saw? Right? Who's going to accuse them of not having the knowledge? Were they some very knowledgeable men there among the Pharisees and Sadducees, for that matter? There were. It wasn't the knowledge issue, but it was absolutely the heart issue and the hypocrisy that went with that. And going back to Tim's point, at some time, do you think that knowledge got them to the point where they started looking down their nose at other people? We know it did. When they looked at tax collectors and others, how did they see them? They're not worth my time. They're not even worth me bothering to try to help. It's like they're not even human beings. Here we are, and then there they are. It's awful. And you can have all the knowledge in the world. If that's your heart, it's going to lead to just more rot and more poison. It's a great point, Joe. You're absolutely right in that. Good. Any other thoughts? Don, go ahead.
Contentment also has to do with happiness. And happiness is a choice. You can choose to be happy, or you can choose to be a bitter, bitter person. And if you're happy and you think of the Lord, then you're happy in the Lord and you do the right thing. And you don't point fingers at someone else, say, I'm a happy person, they're not, maybe I can help them be happy. So happiness is a choice.
It is, and it's active. Yeah, I think we fall into this belief that happiness is just going to magically come to me. I'm just going to wake up and I'm just going to be joyful. Now, there are some people who wake up and they're pretty excited. But it is active. It is a commitment to be joyful, because it requires me to make some constant decisions. Have you ever known someone who didn't have very much physically and yet they're extremely happy? Let's talk about some. Maybe it was a couple Sundays ago. Obviously, what does their happiness not depend on? Obviously,
other people.
Yeah, and stuff and those things. Their happiness comes from another place. It comes from. Do you think they appreciated what they did have? Do you think they made the most of it? Do you think they know where it came from? Of course, the answer to all those questions is yes. I will be happy if I'm in that state. And I think we have to go back to Paul. Paul is talking about rejoice, rejoice again. I say rejoice. Where is he when he's saying this? He's in Rome, in prison. How can he do that? Because he's looking at the blessings he does have. He may not be able to just open the door and walk around Rome or sail to another place, but what can he do?
Make the best of this situation.
He knows that he has the relationship with his God, that he can talk and pray to him. He knows that he can teach the gospel so that lost souls can be saved. He knows that. Did he take joy in it? Took extreme joy in it. So Donna's right. Happiness is not defined by the situation. It's defined by our reaction to the things going on in this life. And it's a personal decision. You can't make me happy. And you see that problem in relationships a lot of times where somebody, I'm trying to make him happy. I'm trying to make him happy. You're not going to do it. He's going to have to choose joy himself. And it's going to require work. Chuck?
There's lots of several different cases other than Paul about being content in bad situations. Daniel, Shadrach, and Abednego. Yeah. I mean, they were dire straits. I mean, it was terrible. But they made the best of it. Look how far Daniel went. Various different ones. It's how you look at the situation and how you trust in God.
And another point Donna made was it doesn't depend on other people. Look, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Daniel, basically there weren't any other people, right? I mean, they were in some situations by themselves. I think when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are called on to worship that big idol that Nebuchadnezzar had made, what did everybody around them do?
Worship.
Well, they worshiped. Of course they did. And so sometimes it may just be a handful. It may just be that tiny, tiny remnant. Sometimes it may just be you. Or it may seem that way. In that moment, you're the only one right there. But it's not really you alone. And that's the thing that Daniel understood. How in the world could he purpose in his heart? How could he tell the one who was given charge over them, just try me. Try us. Try us and see if we're not in better shape than the others. How could he do it? Because he wasn't alone. And he understood that his Heavenly Father was with him. We need to get that as well. Good. Good thoughts. Well, those are things that ruin unity. Let's talk about the other side. What are some things that promote it, that will make unity easier and better and stronger amongst us as brethren? Turn there in Philippians 2. We have spent a lot of time in this section. It's kind of funny how there are certain passages, it seems like they'll come up in a Bible class and in sermons and in another Bible class, and you just seem to really... I'm glad when that happens, because I ought to get them when we go over them like that again and again. And I love this section anyway in Philippians. But Philippians 2, if someone will read 3 through 5 for us, please.
Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others.
This is the exact opposite of selfishness, isn't it? This is putting someone else before myself. Putting their needs, what will help them, putting that before what I want. It's an attitude of self-sacrifice. It's a willingness to defer to others. And we do that in matters of judgment at times. Don't we have to defer to the judgment of others? I'm not talking about something that involves sin. I'm talking about just something that you may feel one way, I feel another way. Neither one of them sin. You love this songbook. I don't like that songbook. Well, what can I do? Get over it. Yeah, yeah. Or we can split the church. We kind of chuckle at that. Don't chuckle. That kind of stuff, as petty and ridiculous as it is, can destroy unity among brethren, because somebody is not willing to just take a step back and say, you know what, this is not that important. If it's that important to you, then I love you. Okay, we're not talking about sin here. This is just a matter of judgment. I need to be willing to not get my way. This is something we work hard with little children to try and instill in them early, so that they'll understand that. I saw a hand. Jeff, go ahead.
This is that bad show. But usually, little simple things like that can very easily lead to divisiveness. If I don't like this songbook, and Brother Andy does, and I'm going to find a way to make his life less happy because he's not going along with what I want. And little bit of things usually are the things that is little molehills like that usually turn into mountains. And if we're not careful, if I have the genuine heartfelt love for him,
yeah,
that's not going to matter.
Yep.
I would probably say to him in a one-on-one, why don't we have a common interest in this songbook or that songbook? And then we can fix it right then and there. Or we may decide, so, well, let's just put away both books and let's do another book. But the important thing is not allowing little brush fires like that to burn down the forest.
Yeah.
And usually that's what happens.
Joe, you've got like three or four fantastic points there. And let's just look at some of them. It does come down in its simplest form. If I love you enough, I'm not going to let this little stuff get in the way of that. If I feel that way about you, and I know that this is of no consequence, I can get over myself, can I? Because if I love you, I do want you to be happy. And if this is something that will help you to grow more and strengthen you and encourage you, then what would I want loving you? I want you to grow and be encouraged and be strengthened. So, of course. Joe's other point is fantastic, because if this is done, threats to unity will be removed before they can ever take root. If there is a problem, go talk about it. What a concept, right? Here, you feel this way. I feel this way. Let's actually talk about it and see if we can't come to some kind of agreement, right? It seems easy. How many times is that not done? How many times is there an issue between you and me? But before I go to you and say anything about it, I'm just going to sit over here and be bitter for about 3 months. I'm just going to let it boil and boil and boil. And then what's going to happen? If I let that little petty thing in me and it starts boiling, what's going to happen the next time you do something that fractionally may irritate me? Stack it on top. Oh, now it's this too. Okay, I see how you're going to be, Joe. Okay. And then 3 weeks later, what's going to happen? And here we are. And now what's happened? The whole thing's been destroyed, when what could have happened is we could have come together and realized, you know what, this is easy. We can take care of this. Isn't that the whole point of Matthew 18, that approach that's given there? You can take care of this before it becomes a danger. And who does it benefit? Everybody. Everybody. You, me, and the whole congregation, because they never have to know about it. So it's such a simple plan, but it fails so often because people don't employ the simple plan. Matt, you go ahead.
These things that we're talking about, with the pettiness, and I think are really important for us to consider now with the local body being scripturally organized and under our elders. You know, it's something we need to think about, because our elders may make some decisions throughout the process of time about petty things that not everybody agrees with. And as long as they're not anything that affects scriptural basis, they feel like that's what's best for the congregation. And it might be that they want the walls in here painted pink, or it might be that they want something to happen, you know, that has nothing that affects our stance here.
Yeah.
That we still remain sound in our beliefs, but some of us may not completely agree with it. They may choose to change songbooks somewhere down the road, and some of us may go, "Well, we, I grew up on sacred selections, and y'all used to pound me about it." But we may be maybe in setting our ways and be like, "I love this song, but why are we changing?" But all that said is that we're going to have to learn to get over it, because we could really hold hard feelings about stuff that's really stupid, as long as it's, you know, nothing scriptural involvement towards our elders. Just another aspect of this that we need to consider to move forward here.
It is going right off of that. The same could very well be true with decisions that the deacons make regarding some of their individual areas. The elders have given them the ability to handle those areas. And certainly they're not going against the elders in that. They would run those things by them. But they may change something up because they perceive that it can be done in a way that's more beneficial. I don't need to be a roadblock to them in that. I need to help them in that. So that, again, that just comes back to being willing to sacrifice myself a little bit. And when it comes to the elders, this is what we appointed them for. And here's the other thing. Do you think they just sit around and say, what can we arbitrarily do to irritate people today? We hadn't had an argument in like 2 years. Let's make somebody crazy. I am quite sure that has never occurred in any of their meetings. So if they're making the decision, what's the reason behind it? They are concerned about this congregation, and they perceive that this is going to help the congregation to grow or be strengthened in some way. If I can keep that fact in mind, it'll help all of this stuff a whole lot more. They're doing this out of love and a desire to help grow. This is not just some arbitrary petty thing that they're slinging around. So that mindset will help us too. Tim, go ahead.
These skills that we're talking about, It may not even be a hard problem necessarily. We all have goodwill towards one another. But just as in a marriage, because we come from different backgrounds, and because we see things differently, if we don't actively develop these skills, and I mean practically by actually interacting with one another and having somebody show us how to do those things, just as in marriages, that we actively love this person more than anything else in the world, and we still go sideways with each other because we're not practicing those skills. We're not good at that. And when we're not good at something, we tend to avoid those things, which aggravates it. And so, like a father, if our elders are not easily entreated, or if the members are not submissive, just as we are supposed to be with one another in all things, if we don't see that as our role, then whether we're selfish is not just the only problem. It's that we haven't taken time to develop these skills to equip ourselves with the very thing that gives God the most glory.
In addition, I know one answer for this. You know, how do we keep from being selfish? We be selfless. We understand that. What are some ways that we can demonstrate that? I think one is generosity, and that's not just money. I think it's being generous toward others with my time and with my prayers. I don't want that to sound crazy. Does that sound crazy? Be generous toward others with my prayer time. If I do that, and I'm just thinking of things that we do away from this building when we're not together. I can pray for you, or I can pray for you. There's a difference in those things, right? I can say, oh, Lord, bless the saints at Eastside, and then move on. Or I can think about individually my brothers and sisters and the things that they're going through. I would submit to you that if you do it that way, you're going to see the relationship grow. Because when you see them on Sunday morning, you know they've been going through something. You're not going to say, well, how you doing? You're going to specifically ask, well, have you heard any more about this? How has anything changed from the last time we talked about this? Now, the interest is not just this general, hey, how you doing? It is a focused, I want to know. Because I'm genuinely concerned. And that will help grow the relationship. That's, to me, that is just, I'm throwing that out there for you. It's something that this past year I've really tried to do more of. Instead of pray in general, pray in specifics for individual brethren. And it has helped me tremendously. So there's something for you that you may want to do as well. Go to Romans 12.
Plan.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm sorry.
The last part of verse 3 there.
Yeah.
Too often, I think we have gotten trouble putting our brothers and sisters on the same plane we are. For this verse tells us to esteem them higher than we are.
Yeah.
That's a command.
Yeah. Yeah. And going back to the other points that we've made, if I feel this way, you feel this way. But what if I put you higher? Now what will I do? I'll submit to it, right? And you guys know we're not talking about sin. Sin changes that whole design. We understand that. But it is a matter of no spiritual consequence. There's no sin involved. I feel this way, you feel this way, here we are. But if I elevate you to the more esteemed position, I'll fall under. I'll submit to it. I'll willingly do that. And it'll help us both. That relationship will grow because what will you do?
The same thing.
What if I feel very, very strongly about something 6 months down the road? And you feel pretty strongly about something, but it's not a matter of consequence or sin, but you know how strongly I feel about it. What will you do? You know, he did this for me then. Won't it be easier to just... See, this goes on and on, and these applications, they just keep... They keep growing. It's a cycle that happens. Great point, Steve. Thank you. Very, very good. Roy, go ahead.
You know, we do most of these things in a marriage relationship. We already practice most of these things, you know. If in case that Margaret likes her steak well done, and I like mine medium, but I eat well done steaks because, you know, she likes well done. It can work the same way in our spiritual relationship. When things that are not involved in sin, we just give in to the other person because we love them.
Here is, don't take this as a silly example. It's big. It's bigger than it's going to sound. Monday night, Sasha watched the entire national championship football game with me. Now, for those of you who know Sasha, that is a big deal. She hates football so much. But why did she sit and watch that whole very long thing late into the night? She knew it was a big deal to me. I wanted to see it so badly. And so she spent that time with me. Now, what's going to happen next time she wants to do something?
You better, right?
No, I'm going to be a whole lot more willing. I'm going to remember that night. You know, she did. She sat through that. So when she wants to go see this completely ridiculous movie or whatever it is, it's going to be a lot more easy for me to just say, okay. And Roy is right. We do it constantly. We do it all the time. We should be. And it makes the bond stronger in that. Now, Joe, go ahead.
Back to your example. But to me, that's a perfect example of selflessness on her part. And it is an example of her overall righteousness. It is not just about football. When she yields that time of hers, you know she's going to do that in more important areas. She's not going to just look at frivolous everyday things to be submissive about. But serious matters that involve her relationship with God, you have just seen her demonstrate how she's gonna put importance on those things. And in doing so, rather than quote a personal comment, it can't help but to make you a better man.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. Chuck.
I think it's important that we look at the importance of doing something for someone because you want to versus doing something for someone to see what I can get out of you next time.
Yeah, which that certainly goes back to the heart issue. It's not being generous toward each other as a setup for down the road. It is genuine affection.
I'm holding it over someone's head.
You know, I don't do good things for my kids because I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to be old one day and I need somebody to take me to the store. You know, that is not my reasoning behind why I do good things for them. Why do I do it for them? I love them. I love them. And I want to be able to do what is best and what will help them spiritually especially, but also in physical things. That's a good point, Chuck. Thank you. Steve.
Brother and I have different opinions on something, and the brother is not willing to give in on his opinion and as we stated, not scriptural, and I give in to him, what happens next time? Do I say to myself, there's no way I'm going to give in? He didn't last time, so I'm not giving in this time. We're still supposed to esteem him higher than we are.
Yeah.
Or her.
Yeah. This takes practice. Right. We'll get better at it the more we do it. You know, just talking about it is just theory. Theory is pretty worthless. Putting it into practice is when it really it affects something. And the more we put it into practice, the more natural it'll be. It'll be the first thing we go to. That's good, Steve. Matt?
Just with Steve's example, which is something we do it. You know, on a frequent occasion, think about the influence you have on that person. It could be someone that's maybe not a really strong Christian, but to have that submissiveness to give in like that, it may not matter if there's a next time that you have that instance come up with that same person, but if it is, they may be like so wowed by what you did, it would never come to that. So it kind of goes back to the example that we set, doing those type of things.
Also going off of what Steve said, it may not happen after one time, right? It may be a lot of times that I end up submitting. But could it affect them down the road? What if they are weaker and there's something that they struggle with? But what if they see 10 years of me being willing to be submissive, not only to them, but to my other brethren about things that don't matter? Do you think that could affect them over time? It may not be instantaneous. You know, our microwave society, we expect things to happen overnight, flip of the switch. Probably not going to be. But what about year after year after year of that consistent submit sacrificial behavior? Could that influence somebody? I think it can. I know that it can. We can think of examples of people who have obeyed the gospel because of seeing a good example for years and years and decades. So this is, and we're not just throwing this out here. This is something that is very impactful. Matthew, did you have something I didn't want to miss?
Yeah, I was
going
to say, when it comes to that, it's good, and we should always remember that in 1 Corinthians, Paul tells us, you know, why not let yourself be cheated? Why not accept wrong when a brother does that to you? But on the flip side, the idea of keeping unity, we also need to examine ourselves and see, do we ask more of our brethren than we take? Are we willing to give more of our time than what we're willing to request? Because I've seen friends and who aren't faithful at all. It's not the big issues that cause the collapse of a relationship. It's not like you stole my car and I can't forgive him for that. It's more like you said earlier, it's one peg. You know, we've got that old saying, it's finally the straw that broke the camel's back. It's the theory that this whole amount of light things have piled up and up, that it's caused the collapse. And sometimes we can not even think about it. If somebody giving up their time, you know, I did A, B, C, D, and all I need is one thing and something very small, and it affects us because it can be something that you look at it. It's not something physical. It's something personal. I'm not worth their time, but I've given so much. And we should let ourselves be cheated. What's it meant? We're human. And that stuff affects us too. And I've seen it can cause a big collapse in our relationship when somebody feels that the sides are one-sided. Now, here comes Matthew. He's always there when he needs me. You know, one of those things that you're only there asking is because it can really strain the relationship and the unity. We should make sure we're doing more.
I was going to say, the influence we have on helping others is also a teaching tool to our children. If our children see us, how we do things for others out of the goodness of their hearts, then that is training them to be that same way. But if they see that you're doing things, oh, I did this for them, they're going to do this for me next time. They're going to see that, and they're going to copy what you do.
And another thing to go with that, I can do the right thing, but then I can get in the car or get at home and gripe about it. They're going to see that too. And first thing they're going to realize is, they may not be able to put it into words, but over time they're going to realize, Daddy's a hypocrite. And he says the right thing. He does the right thing. But he doesn't love it. Is that going to affect their faith and their foundation spiritually? It's going to bust holes all in. It's good, Chuck. Thank you. Yeah.
So the practical application, we don't need to go too far in that we're going to acquiesce to an individual every time. Because if we really do love our brother, and we get into those scenarios, and yes, we acquiesce the first time, and the second time a brother does that, and the third time a brother does that, and if we really love that brother, we're going to teach them the lesson we are studying this morning. Not so that we can win the argument or win whatever the matter is, but because we love our brother, we want to teach them that it's right to be selfless. And don't shirk away. And sometimes it may be a difficult situation that you have to stand up. You have to do it for the right motivation. You're doing it to help that individual, not for you personally to win, because you want to see that brother advance and learn and mature and eventually get to heaven. Because if that brother has that attitude, then that's going to impede their progress and maturity and potentially them getting to heaven. So just because we run into those situations, I'm not always a proponent of that we need to acquiesce every time. Sometimes we've got to stand up and have a backbone and say, no, this is not right. But we do it out of love for our brother.
Maybe a way we can do that is to bring them along with us when we're doing something for someone else, to put them in a position where they have to be part of it and see it. And maybe there's a lot of maybes there, but Andy's point is well taken. We need to take advantage of the teaching opportunities. Go ahead, Tim.
I love what Andy said. My problem is I'm not patient enough to wait those 4 or 5 times that I've acquiesced to that person and then bring it up. I want to bring it up the first time and say, hey, I'm acquiescing to you. I'm giving in right now. But I want you to know that I'm right about this. But if I can purposefully submit, that I don't have the attitude that I'm just getting over it, but that I'm purposefully giving God glory in submitting to this, when I'm taking the wrong, then I am going to be able to do it out of love instead of resentment, because I'm doing it for God. Instead of for some nebulous thing. And I'm not going to end up resenting it over time, because I'm doing it because God asks me to be like
that. I think it'll be easier for us to make these decisions off of something that Andy said when I am thinking about that brother's soul. When what I want is him to grow and go to heaven, if that's my motivation, it'll be a lot easier to figure out how to approach it, because that's the end goal that I want. And mine as well. I mean, let's not forget that. This doing these things will help us to grow spiritually too. Okay, good. Let's stop there.